The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Welcome, everybody. My question for today is, how many views does it take to get empowerment? You've heard about YouTube bringing fame, fortune to, like, oh, let's say Justin Bieber, Susan Boyle, and so many other people that we don't know their names, but they go viral like in overnight. I mean, it's crazy. So sites like YouTube and anyone with a camera or a computer, they actually can create their own fame. Maybe not fortune, but fame. And so today, my guest, believe it or not, she's doctor, author, producer, film director, let's see, what else? Teacher. That's important because she teaches a course on totally about how YouTube can inspire, empower, and anywhere from the classroom to business and whatever. So I'd like to introduce my guest, Dr. Alexandra Yuhas. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Thank you.
Okay, great. Welcome.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, your course, I mean, a lot of people think it's only for like generation, you know, Y or millenniums and stuff like that, but it goes much beyond that, right? I mean,
absolutely. First of all, let me give you a little background. I started teaching a class about YouTube in 2007. I've actually taught it three times, 2007, 2008, and 2010, and I'm currently teaching a class. And when I first announced that I was going to teach a class about YouTube, it actually went viral, as you were saying in your opening comments. Everyone thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever heard, and it was in every newspaper and on the radio, and television crews came to see the class. And of course, what was really interesting was that it was sort of a joke to say, there's a professor teaching a class about YouTube, isn't that funny? They're watching YouTube videos, which themselves are entertaining and silly. As soon as I spoke to anyone on the radio or to any of the news broadcasters who were interviewing me, everyone understood what a serious topic YouTube is and why it was important for college students and for me as a professor to think seriously about YouTube. Now, I just say that was in 2007. Now, in 8 years later, almost 10 years into the life of YouTube, I think it is quite clear how serious YouTube is. And I'll just name four or five ways that it's an extremely important thing to think about and study. First of all, YouTube has absolutely altered the landscape of mainstream media in relationship to moving images. And believe me, studio owners, television station owners, and people who make a living making traditional media are very aware that YouTube is both a threat and also a possible platform to move moving images. So financially and in relationship to corporate media making, it's extremely serious and very important to think about. But perhaps it's interesting for people listening to your show, what YouTube has done, which is very serious, it has allowed anybody with a camera, as you said, and a computer access to an audience and has allowed them an opportunity to say what they believe in, to think about what matters to them, to make media expression and to share it with other people. And so from a sort of bottom-up kind of thinking, it's also very important in that it allows everyday people to speak and be heard. This is another very serious thing that we think about in my class when I work with young people. I would say the third way that YouTube is very serious and not something silly, even if a lot of the videos on YouTube are silly, is that it allows us to have some sense of what everyday users like to watch. So unlike traditional television that was a top-down structure where viewers watched whatever the networks put in front of them, on YouTube, people like things, they comment, and that is part of the process of something going viral. Everyone who's on YouTube, including corporations and everyday users, has a sense of what people like. So it's a really new way to understand what people who consume media want to see. And different kinds of media are being produced now than were made when the network model was the only model by which consumers received media. So that's extremely important. It gives viewers, everyday viewers, much more say over what is being made. You talked about in your introduction the idea about anyone can create fame. And it's true. There are many, many YouTube celebrities, people who have become famous because they do the thing they do very well on YouTube, and that could be something very silly, but it is also often things that are quite serious. So educational channels where people describe physics, or beauty channels where people describe how to put makeup on. This is also a different route into public attention and celebrity, and for many of those people, a living. So people who are famous on YouTube actually make a perfectly fine living making YouTube videos. So that's an introduction to what we're doing in the class and what we're thinking about.
Well, you make a great point. I mean, who would have thought a political platform, when President Obama goes out on YouTube and makes points to be able to connect with the younger generation? I mean, that would have been unheard of years and years ago. I mean,
you raise a good point, and he was actually called the YouTube president because when he took office, he had a weekly fireside chat that he put onto YouTube as opposed to only onto network television or radio, which would have been the traditional model. Now, I think you're right to suggest that that is a good way to meet young people and to reach young people. But I don't think, and demographically I believe it is true, that it is only young people on YouTube. So millions and millions and millions of people all over the world go to YouTube instead of going to mainstream television, instead of going to films, instead of going to radio. And while it may be true that a significant percentage of that demographic is young people, there are people of all ages on YouTube. For instance, one of the first YouTube celebrities was called Geriatric 1937. I'm pretty sure that's what his name was on YouTube. And he was a 70-something-year-old man who did a video blog, which is one of the popular, very unique formats of media that happens on YouTube. And he talked about what it was like to be aging and what it was like to be aging and engaging in contemporary media. And he became one of the first YouTube celebrities. So I think what's interesting is that it's a false assumption to think that only young people use social media. And it's really fascinating to think about how other generations of Americans, and in fact people all over the world, are using these web-based platforms. I would also add, in my class this year, the class is called Learning from YouTube, and I teach it at Pitzer College in Claremont, California, at a group of colleges called the Claremont Colleges. We have a program at the Claremont Colleges where senior citizens in our area can come to Claremont and take college classes, audit them, for free. And we have a senior participant in our classroom, a man named Bob, who is 72 years old. And it has been really, really informative and incredibly important for my students, who are all 18 to 22-year-old young people, to listen to Bob's experience of YouTube and to watch Bob learn along with them, and to see the kind, everyone in my class makes videos, to see the kinds of videos Bob makes, to see the kinds of videos Bob watches. Mm-hmm. And it's been very important for them to understand that their experience of social media, so YouTube or Twitter or Flickr or all of these sites that, you know, a lot of young people spend time on, is not the only experience, and that people of all generations are using these new platforms for communication and expression, and that they need to thoughtfully engage with what Bob does with the site as well as what they do. So, for instance, they had an assignment where they needed to show each other typical YouTube videos that raised some of the complicated themes that we were reading about in our class. Mm-hmm. We read a book. There are several serious academic books about YouTube. I've written one of them, but this book was written by a professor in Canada called Michael Strangelove. And he had a chapter in that book about politics on YouTube, which is where you also began. Mm-hmm. And what Bob wanted to research was the representation of the Second World War on YouTube. He wanted to see the kinds of images that were there, but he also wanted to share with the young people in my class how important those images were for him as a young man growing up. And he wanted to share that history with them. And, of course, one of the great truths about YouTube is that every kind of media that has ever been made mm-hmm. is on YouTube. And it is actually the world's largest archive of moving images. It's a crazy archive, and it's a poorly organized archive, but there are more moving images there than held anywhere else in the world. And as we know, if you want to look up World War II, there's hundreds of thousands of images you can find there. And so Bob showed us some of them in class.
Well, you know what I heard? I love this word about YouTube. They call it Freezy, F-R-E-A-S-Y, Freezy, because it's free and easy, and it features anything you want at your fingertips, free and easy. I mean, I thought that was, you know, like, wow, that is so true. You want to bake a cake? You want to know how to, you know, do Halloween makeup? Whatever, it's at your fingertips.
That is correct, and I think we should celebrate that aspect of YouTube, that only in 10 years you can pretty much learn how to do anything because somebody in the world has made a video about how to do that on YouTube. But I would take some exception with the idea that it's free, or at least I would complicate that. It absolutely is free in the sense mm-hmm. that you don't have to pay for the service. Of course, you have to pay for your internet service. So are people in the world, many of them, who don't have mm-hmm. access to YouTube for free. But as importantly, as is true in all of the social media that we use for free, I am sure that your viewers understand, as do you, that your data, what you click on, what you like, what you watch, is being sold by Google in this case, because Google owns YouTube, to businesses all around the world who use that information to sell you things. So while it is free, you are freely giving that information to corporations who then send you ads, the ads that you see on the side of YouTube, for instance, and who use that data in other ways as well. So you aren't paying with money, but you are paying with information. And that's in the terms of service of the site.
And there's different aspects of that with Google, or whether you have your own YouTube account. Is that correct?
It is. Again, the financial background of the internet is very complicated. And most of us don't pay a lot of attention to it. We're willing to trade all of the things that we get for free on the internet for the mysterious things that we're selling to corporations who are buying them. And again, everyone can set their own settings to some extent.
Okay, doctor, at this point, we're going to break, if you don't mind me interrupting you, and be right back with Dr. Alexander Wyatt. I can't say that name right. How do you say it again? Warhaz?
It's Juhas.
Juhas. I'm so sorry. Juhas. Okay. I won't forget again. Thank you.
No problem.
We're right.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, we're back with Dr. Alexander Wyatt, who has this incredible course on YouTube. I know it sounds like a little bit out there, but things you can learn in social media that can catapult you to empowerment. So, we're back. How you doing, Doctor?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. I wanted to know, how did this originate, your course?
Well, I am a professor of media studies. My PhD is in a field called cinema studies, and my interest in cinema studies is very similar to that of your show, or my interest as a scholar, which is about how people have used media for self-empowerment, and particularly how women have used media for self-empowerment over, during the history of moving images, so cinema, television, and video. And when people in my life started sending me emails with YouTube clips, now this is the very beginning of YouTube, I would hit on the link, and what I would always see was silly, outrageous, comical, often obnoxious.
I can imagine, yeah.
Little videos. And I thought to myself, when I was talking about how people, when people have access to cameras and the distribution of moving images, that will lead to empowerment, I was not talking about the making of YouTube videos. That was my initial response. They seemed too silly and too inconsequential, and not about the important things that matter to people. So I made fun of it for a while, and I didn't pay attention to it for a while. So I'm much more interested in studying serious things like documentaries and diary films, and I'm very interested in thinking about women's expression in Hollywood cinema. And pardon me, that's my phone. I need to turn that off. And then I thought, you know what? I'm jumping to conclusions here, and I really need to think seriously about what it means when people have access to cameras in a way that has never been known in the history of cameras, and people have access to distribution. That is to say, by putting something on YouTube, other people can see it. It used to be quite hard if you made something to get it to audiences. And I need to think seriously about what people are making and how that is a form of empowerment for those people who are motivated to make media because of YouTube, how it might be a form of empowerment for people to see those images, and also, critically, in what ways are there obstacles to empowerment in the site, in the experience? And so that's when I decided to not turn YouTube off or look away or think it was silly or stupid, but to actually take it seriously and teach a college class on it. And I've now been doing that for 7 years.
Wow.
And I know a lot about YouTube. It seems kind of silly or funny to be a professor of YouTube, but in fact, as I've been trying to explain to you, it's a way to ask very important and serious questions about our culture right now, and particularly the way in which social media affects our ability to express ourselves, our abilities to communicate, and our ability to share important ideas about the culture without having to get past the hurdles of mainstream media.
Well, I also understand that videos have a staying effect because it's visual. It goes into the mind. So it's a good learning tool.
That is correct. And I think one of the, again, every question you ask reminds me of other kinds of very serious issues we think about in the class and that scholars of YouTube think about. So when I began, there weren't a lot of scholars of YouTube because YouTube was only 2 years old, but now there's quite a bit of academic thinking and writing. And one of those is about what you're calling, which is, or what you're naming, what we call visual literacy. And one of the things that we understand is young people who have spent their lives receiving more and more information visually are actually quite good at learning through visual images and are quite good at understanding the kinds of codes and information that are written into visual images. And so it's very important for us to name how visual images work as a form of expression, but also to work with young people to allow them to be even smarter readers of visual images, in just the way that in generations before, we taught young people how to be smart readers of written language. Given that so much of the information that young people get now, and all of us for that matter, is in the form of images, we want to teach media literacy. And that also is, media literacy means making media. So how do you make smart media? How do you make media and images that express the kinds of things you want to express in ways that are poetic, in ways that are persuasive, in ways that are complex, and not just the sort of simple and glib and silly forms that a great deal of YouTube videos make. And just to be very clear, I don't dislike the simple and silly and glib cat videos that are all over YouTube, for instance. But as a scholar of media and someone who's interested in questions of empowerment in relationship to media production, I'm interested in how human beings do the most complicated things and say the most complicated things and personal things and focus on the issues, the deep issues that matter to us as human beings through making and consuming media, not just the fun and forgettable, which is what a great deal of YouTube is.
Well, video, what I see is we all have different paradigms of learning, whether it's visual, audio, or kinesthetic, or a combination. With a video, you can see it, you can hear it, and you can take your fingers and rewind it.
That is right.
It encompasses for every different modality of learning, which, you know, depending on what stronger strength you have, but it does encompass all that.
It does, and so we call scholarship about internet-based culture multimodal scholarship for precisely the reason that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
On a web page is held moving images, sound, design, colors, words, and for those of us who make digital culture, we have to think multimodally. And for those of us who receive and enjoy digital culture, we are receiving multimodally. And I think your show is about empowerment, and mm-hmm. it is extremely empowering to have access to all of these modes of communication in one place. On the other hand, one needs to be very skilled to think about how all of those modes of communication are making meaning in combination with each other. Of course, when people make professional websites and people make professional media online, it's a collaborative project, and you have a lot of very well-trained people doing all of those different functions. But in the class Learning from YouTube, I'm very interested, as are my students, in thinking about how we might learn differently in a multimodal environment than human beings historically have in a more word-based or print-based environment. And I'm not only celebratory of that change, so I'm also critical of what kinds of things we lose when we become more and more entrenched in learning environments that are multimodal. So I'll give you two examples of what we might lose, and we could also think about what we gain. I'm eager to think about both. But my students and I talk about how for videos to be successful on YouTube, they need to be very short, they need to be very condensed, they tend to summarize things, and they tend to organize learning around one simple, very emotional idea. And while that 2-minute video or that 3-minute video, you might take away that simplified version of something and have learned it, that does not compare to the 2-hour version, which would be a feature film, or the 10-hour version, which would be reading an entire book. So it starts to produce a kind of superficiality around learning, which I think has real consequences. So people have much more access to many things, but the YouTube platform and the ways we receive social media is completely organized around things that are shortened and made simplified. So as any of us who are interested in education, but also interested in the culture more broadly, want to think about the consequences of a pared down or more simplified system of learning. I think the other really important consequence to think about in relationship to doing more and more learning in this environment,
just hold that thought for 1 second while we go to commercial break?
Sure.
I love it. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Okay, thank you with Dr. Alexander Juarez.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Dr. Alexander Huas. And besides a PhD in cinema studies from NYU and a breakthrough course in YouTube media, has gained so much fame. It's incredible. And it enlightens. People just think like YouTube, like the silly stuff like we were talking about, the cat on the Roto-Rooter, whatever it's called. But the serious side of it, this is media, this is talking to everybody, and it's impacting everybody's lives. And I think that's what we want to discuss. How can it empower you and bring you to the next level? Right, Doctor?
That's correct.
Okay, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, right before I asked you a question, like the attention span, I mean, with Twitter and everything there, everything's just bits, 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 bites, bites, bites. So, what would be the ideal, I mean, to, you know, to get your message across?
I think that the current media environment, things are getting shorter and shorter, more and more condensed, and the ideal length of things, to at least to get viral attention, is very short. So something like 2 minutes on a YouTube video or less. And I was saying to you during the break, there's a media platform, a video platform that many young people use now called Vine, which is 7-second videos. I want to be very clear that this is one of the ways that many of us are critical of the changes to our culture that are happening very quickly because of social media. This is to say, you have an hour-long show. That is enough time for you and I to have a conversation in depth, for your listeners to think carefully about the issues that I'm interested in. If you saw a two-minute version of my class, you would know that I was teaching a class, and I could probably even list 10 of the things that we think about, but it would be a very different kind of engagement. So we also have to begin to ask the question, what people gain from virality, which is to say what people gain from large numbers of people seeing you, large numbers of people hearing you. What we lose is complexity. What we lose is depth. What we lose is building conversation. And
social
again,
skills?
These are all trade-offs.
Right.
And we haven't talked very much about those trade-offs as a society. We've accepted most of these delivery platforms because they've been given to us for free by corporations who make a great deal of money from us using them.
But they do use going back to like our reptilian brain, like fight or flight. And, yes. And you have 7 seconds to make a first impression.
You do have 7 seconds to make a first impression.
So,
but I think that the way that most of us consume social media is that we flip from one thing to another to another to another. And you may make a good impression, and you may use that good impression to steer people towards deeper or more complete content. But again, short, impactful media tends to be to produce a very big charge as you receive it, but is very interchangeable and very forgettable.
But it's also,
and because there's so much of it.
That's what I was going to say. It's so packaged, too.
That is also true. So, again, in this conversation, which is an hour long, which is a very, very long time in relationship to most media, there's room for pauses, and there's room for reiteration, and there's room for me thinking and changing my mind. In these highly condensed things that we receive on social media, that very important function in human communication is edited away.
You know what I want to ask you? I saw the other day in research, ISIS, they have over 46,000 Twitter accounts.
Okay. I would have to imagine it's many more than 46,000.
Right, but you know, when you multiply, you know, whatever. But so, there's no intonation, there's no really visual. I really don't know, but I mean, when you limit, you know, like 7 seconds to this and that, anybody can make anything up. What is the downfall to all this? 7 seconds, you know, 20 seconds. I mean, like I said, is it like prepackaged?
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves. And we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadik to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we just ended a little bit and with Dr. Alexandra Juhasz. And let's see, one of her, I mean, I can't name all her, you know, her books, but one of the half a phony fake documentary and Truth's Undoing. She's a producer, director, writer, author, teacher, and her main contribution right now is teaching everybody the pros and cons of learning through YouTube. So welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So I think when we left the air, or fell off the air, whatever, I'm sorry, that I said like everything was so compact, making a message. And to think that ISIS, they said 46,000 Twitter accounts, but then you multiply that by multiplying that. And YouTube and all these social medias could be used in a negative way. I mean,
they can. And I think that's another one of the important things to think about when we begin to analyze these new media structures seriously. So in an environment where anyone and everyone can contribute without much attention, although, I would want to stress that there is a significant amount of censorship on YouTube and social media more generally. So some of that censorship occurs from governments that censor. Some of that censorship occurs because of corporate ownership of media. So, say, a video will be taken down if it uses a copyrighted song would be a primary example. And some of it is because users flag media and media is taken down. There's quite a bit of media taken down on YouTube, but that said, it's a kind of rough and ready, wild and woolly, wild west of ideas. And if you're thinking, for instance, about the experience and the representation of women on YouTube, it's an interesting place to think about the powers, the pros and cons, what is powerful and what is negative in this site. So I've always been interested in thinking about media and empowerment. If you think about media and empowerment and women on YouTube, you see a format where many, many women are making media, are making shows about the things that matter to them. There's large audiences of women who are receiving that information, and it's a very exciting platform for communication and entry for more women into the media landscape. On the other hand, most of the very sexist values and images that have dominated mainstream media also exist on YouTube. So there's, as anyone who spent any time on there knows at all, huge amounts of pornographic or quasi-pornographic material, large amounts of video about women that are derogatory, that are sexualized, that only are viral if women do the more expected and traditional things which are demeaning to women, that reduce us to our bodies, that reduce us to our sexuality, that are interested in us not being intelligent agents of our own ideas. And both of these uses of YouTube as a place of empowerment and self-expression, and YouTube as another channel where traditional and dominant ideas circulate and actually frame what it is to be female. Those are both competing on this site. And you can move through it with one or both of those as your main orientation. It is very hard to avoid highly sexualized images of women on YouTube, just as it is to avoid highly sexualized images of women in any media.
Dr. Juhasz, would you say, how would you feel about, like, being patrolled, like net neutrality, or whether it's internationally or federally, that the government controls what we can and can't see?
I've never been in favor of censorship, and I'm not in favor of
censorship.
Hey,
thank you.
I am in favor of people thinking critically and naming what is visible in their culture. and trying to understand it and trying to understand why it's there. So one of the things I haven't spoken about a great deal is that YouTube, like mainstream television, the financial model of YouTube at this moment is about advertisements. So Google makes money on YouTube because advertisements are sold all over YouTube. They're sold as banners, they're sold as videos on the side, and they're sold as videos in the front of content. And that system, which sells commercials to users who get to use the platform for free, sells us a lot of what the rest of the society sells us all the time. So images of sexualized women sell beer, they sell cars, they sell, you know, anything that we might want to consume, as well as the large number of products that corporations want to sell to women to make us feel better about ourselves. And that is also the system on YouTube. So we don't avoid the structure, what structures media in other environments on YouTube. It's just produced in a slightly different environment.
Okay. Well, Dr. Uhas, it seems like we have a guest waiting online to talk to you. Jane Searcy? Jane. Is that right? Did I say right, Searcy?
Jane Sears. It's a weird last name.
I don't know. Boy, I'm from the South. I bombard all the names with French accents.
Right.
Welcome to the show. And
thank you.
I'd like to hear what you have to add, because I hear that you've been one of the students of the, that great course that Dr. Uhas teaches.
Right, yeah. I'm one of the students in the Learning from YouTube class that we're doing this semester. It's been great. I don't know what kind of questions you want to know about it.
Well, how did you get involved? Is that your major?
My major is media studies, yeah, so it applies to that, and I'm very interested in digital media, in particular online media, so, you know, learning from YouTube is, of course, a perfect way to do that, and the class itself, having been famous when it first started, you know, going viral, was an interesting element to me, so I got very interested in sort of participating in a class that had a history of its own, too.
Oh, my God. So before, when you took it, did you have any media, any kind of feedback from friends or anybody that you took and said, or you were just so inspired to take it?
I don't think anyone that I knew about it. I think that things can go viral and still not reach everyone, you know? I mean, there's sometimes a limit to that. So no one I knew really knew about it, but I just happened to look up stuff about the class, and I knew that it had gone viral. I think I just was inspired because I use YouTube in a certain way, and I was very interested in how other people use YouTube as well. And there's definitely a difference in the class in sort of where people go on YouTube or if they use it, you know, at all, really.
Okay, so correct me. You doing it online, or are you in the classroom?
I'm in the classroom. We're all in the classroom, but we do some of the work via YouTube. Like, we'll post assignments or projects to YouTube, and discuss that with each other and show each other and comment on each other's videos. But the class itself is in a physical classroom.
Okay, let me ask you this: when you post things online, do everybody else get to see, or is it where you hit private where nobody can see it, but you're like the classroom members?
We, as far as I know, I think everyone has made theirs public. I think we have the option to, if we want to have it be private, we can, and we can just send, links to the professor, but that's also sort of part of the class is when you make things public, does that actually do anything, because often our videos are, from channels that are just our personal channels, they're not popular, no one's going to find these videos, so, you make it public, but it doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to have a bunch of people seeing your video, because the algorithms in YouTube just bury things, that aren't popular immediately. So I think most of us, if not all of us, have just kept them public, because no one, seems to find them.
Right. Well, Dr. Uhas, how do you get from one, You know, like just doing a regular, how do you get it viral? I mean, like, what is the, I don't know if there's a recipe, but there must
there
be
no,
some.
There is no secret sauce to virality. If anybody figured it out, they would be selling it and they would be living on an island with their feet up. I think there are, we've been talking about the kinds of things that can go viral, and in fact, we just did a section of the class thinking about virality and not the specific formula, but the generic ideas that allow something to be repeatable, to be available to many people. And maybe Jane can talk about that, because we literally just finished reading a book about that.
Yeah. Okay, Jane.
we were talking about, we read a book, really good book, actually, unusual for an academic text in that it was quite easy to read and short, and I think that's sort of appropriate for the subject matter. But it was on memes and virality and sort of how things are spread, how that works, and the book itself is a good example of some of the dynamics. And, you know, things that spread well are usually simple, you know, easy to comprehend, and they aren't super long, super complicated. And there's not, like Professor Yuha said, there's not really a recipe for it, or else someone would be very rich. But it's, you know, there's certain elements that make things more likely to, or at least, you know, it makes sense when they do go viral. But we've studied a lot about how that happens and what the elements are in things that have gone viral, the difference between going viral and something becoming a meme. So it has to be like remixed and remade and repurposed, to be a meme. And that's sort of what we just did projects on right before spring break, which is right now for us.
I think it's very important to identify that the simplicity and content that we've been talking about has to become associated with a strong feeling. Mm-hmm. So a simple idea connected to a strong feeling tends to be very important for things to go viral. And that strong feeling could be pleasure. It could be comedy, cat videos, for instance, just a warm, fuzzy feeling. It could be shock. It could be dismay.
And so you're saying
the ISIS videos would be a good example of that.
Authenticity.
Authenticity is hard to validate on YouTube, and I'm very glad that you mentioned that. It's also something we speak about a great deal in the class, because we like things very much that feel authentic and made by regular people as opposed to corporate media, but it's very hard to guarantee that anything on YouTube is authentic. Jane, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, there's the, you know, now infamous example of Lonely Girl 15, who is this early YouTube channel that was supposedly a personal video diary of this girl talking about her life, and then things slowly start to get weird, and, you know, it's all done like it's in her bedroom, and, you know, she's just talking to the camera, and everyone thought it was real. I mean, it looked very genuine, but people eventually grew suspicious because it was sort of too good. There's this idea that authenticity can't be that manufactured. You know, she had too good of lighting, too good of editing, and eventually it did come out that it wasn't real. It wasn't just a person. It was an actress doing a little stunt. You know, and so that's sort of, since then, I think there's some more questioning of authenticity. There's a lot of people who still kind of get fooled by things, but there's definitely a lot of skepticism about, is this, you know, really real? Was this set up? So people are still craving that authenticity for sure, but there's a lot of suspicion about, you know, whether that's actually there.
Oh, well, thank you. I have Dr. Sertz. I mean, I'm saying Dr. Sertz.
Hey, I'll take
you.
Cool.
We're getting ready to close the show. 1 minute. Can you tell everybody where everything you need to know, like what's your next project? The next minute. And Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, I'm actually working on a feminist rethinking of the MOOC. The MOOC is a massive online open course, and our version of the MOOC is called the DOC, Distributed Open Collaborative Course. And a lot of the ideas you've been hearing me talk about, which are both critical and excited about the capacities of online media to enhance education and personal expression, are organizing our DOC, Distributed Open Collaborative Course. And you can find the group that runs that is called FemTechNet, FemTechNet, FemTechNet. And we have a website where you can learn about how we are thinking about using online media to better education, especially in relationship to feminism and technology. And so I invite your listeners to see that. And also, my ideas about YouTube are available for free in a digital book. It's not a book that you can see on paper, but you can read on the internet from the MIT Press website. And it's called Learning from YouTube.
Okay. Thank you all. Thank you, Dr. Yuhas and Jane.
My
pleasure.
Thank
you so much. Enlighten everybody about YouTube and everything. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.